Now for agribusiness news, markets, and weather from Studio C, this is Agriculture Today.
I do have to say that our key objective, well, it's cotton and corporate in general, but specifically in Asia, is we're looking to get more cotton into products.
William Kimbrels with Cotton Incorporated.
So in Asia, you can see here we work across the supply chain. Asia is very unique in that we have fully integrated supply chains there. We'll work directly with cotton spinners who are purchasing U.S. cotton, converting that into yarn. We'll work very closely with the fabric manufacturers meaning companies that take the yarn and put it into knit and woven fabrics, and then with dyeing and finishing. Mostly also pulling all the way through to the brand side. So really we've got a, push and pull marketing strategy that's happening there, working very closely with the entire textile supply chain across Asia.
Another thing I really focus on is your numbers. And I say that over and over again.
Alan Grafton is a managerial accountant with Keiko Isom.
I'm always shocked. I've collected lots of data over the past 27, 28 years. And, the first time I really saw this, 20 years ago, I had 26 growers, same area, same, like soil, growing the same crop. We had 26 different yields, 26 different prices, 26 different seed costs, 26 different, everything was different. Everybody had a different outcome. So all this worrying we kind of do and how am I doing? How are they doing? Looking at my neighbor, you really want to start with your numbers. Benchmarking is great. I'm all about benchmarking. I love it. I love aggregating that data. I'm an absolute spreadsheet geek. Anybody that I work with over here will tell you that's where I spend all my time, is in Excel and running spreadsheets. So, but really it's just so important to look at your numbers first. That's the first place you want to benchmark. What does it cost you? Because I can guarantee you, everybody has different capital, different soil. They're paying different prices for products. So not one single person, as you look around, is alike. So you really can't always compare, to your neighbor because you don't know their situation. They may be flush with working capital, and your working capital is at a different place. So your operating interest is more, a lot more. Really focus on yourself is what I want to always tell people.
Number two in his five basics.
It is unbelievably important to be consistent. We've got a lot of tools out there. You guys can spend all day out there running around and not looking at equipment and not looking at things that we traditionally looked at agriculture, but looking at technology. That is the next, that's the next frontier. It's like an arms race. There's so many companies out there, trying to grab data, grab information. But there's a lot that can be held in your books on your own. And being consistent with the chart of accounts, being consistent with your naming conventions. I see it all the time, folks trying to collect data and they refer to a field in 10 different ways. This person is this way and somebody spells a product. You're trying to put it in your equipment and then you try to get that out and it's all over the place. So be consistent. Be consistent with your chart of accounts. Be consistent with your naming conventions. If you call it a supply or call it a repair. Try to put it on the right category, whether it be a building repair or an equipment repair. You can get as granular as you need to be, but just be consistent.
Another one of his rules, be specific.
Fixed costs, variable costs, generic information does not get it. That's why we want to be precise when we're planning. That's why we want to get down to the details. This is just some yield comparisons by variety in 1 year. I think the actual yields were left. The variety type are on here, but this is 1 year trees at different ages. That yielded different. They cost different to grow. They yield different amount of pounds. We just can't use generic data. We've got to use exact information when we're planning.
And the two others, use real business numbers, not business and personal mixed. And finally, focus on the top third of your balance sheet. It's Agriculture Today.
My focus is more on Washington, D.C., and we actually do some PR-type stuff. We have an organization called the Farm Policy Facts and the hand that feeds us that tries to craft our messages in ways that the 535 members of Congress from all over the nation, the messages that are going to be attractive to them.
Tom Sell is a co-founder and managing partner for Combest Sell and Associates, a lobbying firm that focuses on agriculture, speaking recently at World Ag Expo in Tulare, California.
This is really important work, the advocacy that's done. And it's multi-layered. So, you know, I know we wanted to talk some about broadband. I think one of the most important things, somebody said it, is just getting people out into the country. We need to get people out in the country. People are scared to go if they don't have, these days, if they don't have great connectivity all the way. I'm serious. They will avoid places. And so all these issues layer in, and they need to see it. I don't know if it's been talked about among the group, but New York Times is doing a piece there, and it's a three-part series. And the first part of the series was it's about big agriculture, as they say it. And the first series is titled "Meet the People Who Are Killing Our Planet." Hey, farmers, and then they pan over these shots. They actually, I mean, it is over the top. I promise, it is unbelievable. You will just grit your teeth and be mad. But they'll say, like, big ag, U.S. farmers and ranchers in action is going to make you want to think that farms are green and have butterflies and bees. And then they pan over actually a meat packing plant. They pan over a meat packing plant and say, this is what an actual farm looks like. It's like, this is unbelievable. How do they possibly get away with this? Well, one way to challenge that is to actually get people out into the country. Because the country, really, the air is fresher. The grass is greener. It's a great place to be. But it goes into, and I'm a big advocate for rural America. I want more people. I want to kind of build an ethic where people, again, they want it. The American dream would be not just to have an own home, but to have a farm, you know, to do something. We're going to have commercial agriculture, and you have to have the folks who are fully committed. But when you actually have people that are toying with trying to do a garden and those kinds of things, they come to appreciate the challenge. It is not easy, right? This is not you just throw seed over your shoulder and walk away and go to meetings in the wintertime and grow a crop. It's a real challenge. So it's just we need to make our rural communities more connected, more vibrant. Healthcare, things like that are important. Obviously, transportation is important. Mental health is a big deal. One thing I'd say, I'd start off with Washington's not as bad as you think. One good thing they did this year was this bipartisan infrastructure bill. G.T. Thompson said he didn't vote for it, but it was $1.2 trillion. That's a lot of money on top of a lot of spending we've been doing as a nation lately, and a lot of folks are frustrated with that for good reason. But some of the best spending that Washington does are the long-term investments in infrastructure, you know, roads, ports, bridges, rail, broadband. $65 billion in there for broadband. So hopefully it is well spent and well utilized, and that'll be a long-term investment that will continue to bear fruit over time.
Combest Sell and Associates online at combest-sell.com. It's agriculture today.
For livestock producers, the first step is to leverage existing data. Now, this is data from federal programs like the Livestock Forage Program, crop insurance, and the non-insured crop disaster assistance program.
Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack talking about how USDA has been addressing drought and how the programs will work.
We're looking to address gaps in these respective programs and streamline relief to reduce burdens on the producers coming into our office. So here's what we're going to do. In the first phase of the livestock assistance program, we're going to base the payments on existing LFP application data. Now, what that means is we can streamline the application process to require no or minimal additional paperwork from producers. And our goal is to distribute at least half and probably more than half of the $750 million through the first phase of this program by the end of March 2022. Now, the second phase is for those who may not have participated in these programs or have losses that weren't covered in the program or address gaps that we identify. shallow losses and things of that nature, calendar year sales, grazing seasons, et cetera. So we're also going to set aside an additional $500 million from the Commodity Credit Corporation for drought recovery and financial assistance for water smart management practices that support market facilitation. So you can see, by taking a look at the 74,000 folks who have applied for livestock forage, over $500 million in claims, we have $750 million available. You can kind of see where this is headed, but we're going to try to get relief to you all as quickly as we possibly can. Together with these resources, we're going to enable USDA's farm production and conservation agencies to deliver much-needed relief to farmers and livestock producers and design drought resistance efforts responsive to the magnitude of the climate crisis. And we'll have a phased-in approach as well for crop producers in terms of this disaster assistance.
And in addition, Vilsack talking about climate smart solutions. What's that mean?
Policies that drive climate solutions across agriculture sector and rural America can also help to create new revenue opportunities for producers. We need to look at the opportunity side of this challenge. We expect markets in both the U.S. and around the world, they're going to continually demand more climate smart commodities. And we have a long history of market facilitation and development for agriculture and forestry products and climate smart commodities. We think this represents a new and potential growing market opportunity and a high value market opportunity for producers. At USDA, we're on the cusp of providing significant help to encourage the growth of these commodities through Partnerships for Climate Smart Commodities program. Now, we announced the structure of this consistent with the Farmer and Food Alliance, voluntary, locally driven, hoping to create a series of pilots and demonstration projects that will encourage farmers and foresters to come together to deploy climate smart practices, to implement innovative approaches to quantification, monitoring, and verification of those practices in terms of results, and then connect those climate smart commodity results and commodities to markets that value them, creating additional revenue opportunities and income for farmers. Now, I want to stress this approach is voluntary. It is incentive-based. It's going to be available to producers of all sizes, all methods, all locations, and all types of production. Importantly, our work through this program will complement and build on the activities and transactions that are already starting to occur in the private marketplace across America, making those opportunities to add value and create new revenue streams available to more American producers.
That's Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack. It's Agriculture Today.
The cash flow component, I think, is actually going to pop as a bigger issue.
That's Aubrey Betancourt, President, CEO of the Almond Alliance.
It's starting to happen with the importers, too. The trickle-down effect of we've kind of floated and we've made it through and we felt the effects, but it hasn't quite hit the bottom line in that effect just yet. And I think it's going to start hitting home with some of our folks when it comes to financing, both on the import and the export, especially if you're importing inputs to something that you need. I think, you know, the cash flow component's going to be a bigger issue as we go looking forward. And that's something that I'm very worried about from my perspective of needing to keep my farmers farming.
And when it comes to the supply chain disruption, says there are serious consequences.
I keep waiting for, and I haven't quite hit the nail on the head. The only thing I can think of is the only reason we haven't heard screaming from our buyers who are saying, hey, I bought almonds and I haven't gotten them yet, is because that 2020 crop ran long. And I think that's why they're not quite hearing the yelling and screaming and gnashing of teeth yet. But what I worry about is whether it's a market in Germany, and when I say market, I mean actual grocery store, no, an actual market. What I worry about is if we go too long without my almonds on that shelf, they're going to replace it with potato chips. They're going to find something to put on that shelf. And we all know the politics of the grocery store is next level mafioso stuff. That is some serious stuff. If you want to have fun, go learn the politics of the grocery store. And so we're really worried about, we're going to have this dearth of supply. Are we going to have the demand on the other end? Should we get this unblocked? Kind of coming back to my carrier, who's got this really tasty incentive to just go back with an empty. By the way, that's also contributing to our empty issue here in the United States. We don't have enough empties. Why? They're taking them back. So when I do get a receiving window, let's say we finally entice that carrier to stop in Oakland, which we have, and I have to thank Ron Brown and the crew. We've gotten a couple of them back. Why is Oakland important? 85% of California's almonds go out of the Port of Oakland. So that's an important port for us. And quite frankly, it's one of the larger, if not the largest, agricultural export port in the United States. So we really rely on it from a California, especially crop standpoint particularly. Let's say we finally get that carrier to go there. Now the latest problem is that carrier, yeah, okay, I'll come, I'll stop, I'm running behind schedule, but what I normally give you 4 days on a receiving window, meaning I'll give you 4 days to load up your product on my ship. You know what? I'm behind schedule. 4 hours. Get it on the boat in 4 hours, oh, and I'm leaving. And this has happened multiple times in the last few weeks, if not more. And we're also seeing they're doing it on weekends now, too, which means we don't get the labor that we need. They're cutting our receiving windows from 4 days to four hours. I heard one of my members said 3,000 containers of almonds got left because of that receiving window got shortened to 4 hours. So they shoved them to the next week, and now we're looking at the schedule going, who's the next boat and can we get them to take us? Who's the next boat coming into Long Beach and can we convince them to come up to Oakland? So as we're looking at all of this, and I'm using kind of the California model and I'm using almonds as your example, but I'm working with organizations across the United States in poultry and pork and citrus, both my importers and my exporters. Every port I can think, Port Hueneme is up and running in ways that I don't think they ever imagined they would run. And, you know, product will sit out waiting to come in, and it's rotting out on ship, which means we're not getting the payment in when it comes in, or our product that's going overseas is taking too long to get into the port overseas. My citrus guys are taking massive losses because the ship's taking too long. They're backlogged getting in overseas.
It's Agriculture Today.
Asia is the number one manufacturing hub for textiles and apparel.
William Kimbrell is Vice President of Supply Chain Marketing in Asia for Cotton Incorporated.
Asia is a major supplier to a lot of major markets, of course, you including the United States, Europe, but it also is a major supplier for its own domestic markets. So some key markets there, huge consumer markets like Japan, China, and India. And I guess the good news about all this is that cotton is really a key raw material. Cotton is a key component in one of the key raw materials that goes into a lot of the apparel that Asia manufactures. And here, just to capture a little bit of a snapshot, you can see that in crop year 2021, world mill use, world cotton mill use was around 121 million bales. And just in Asia alone, just in the countries in Asia alone, they consumed about 75% of that cotton, around 92 million bales.
Now, China still is number one, but he talks about how Asia adds value to U.S. cotton.
Exports of cotton apparel from Asia are significant, exports of apparel back to the United States. And you can see that Asia is very much a vertical industry. It's very much a self-sustaining industry, meaning that they not only import the raw cotton, but they spin it, knit it into fabric, weave it into fabric, and ultimately put it into garments. And in 2021, about 75% of the cotton apparel coming to the United States was sourced directly from Asia. And here, again, just kind of breaking these things out by countries, because you know, with our Asia offices, as I'll present, we're very active across the entire region. Of course, you can see here that China is the largest exporter of cotton apparel to the United States, but there are a lot of very important players. And with these players, it's also important to recognize that we a lot of times see sourcing shifts. These trends change regularly, and that's really important for us to remain flexible as an organization, and really a great reason why we have three office locations in Asia. These sourcing shifts occur because of a range of different reasons. A lot of times we're looking at chasing costs, but also things like trade policy or political issues will also cause sourcing to shift from one country to another. Even during the pandemic, we had some significant shifts in sourcing because countries like China, in Vietnam, and Bangladesh had extended shutdowns. So brands and retailers had to look to other countries to help fill their orders.
This demand, though, has helped push prices higher. Could we be eroding demand based on the higher prices?
There definitely is a balancing act there, where we want to keep cotton at a competitive price for obviously the cotton producers. You all need to be profitable, but also as you start to work with manufacturers, what is the ceiling, which they want to pay for cotton? It's a competitive market. Cotton does traditionally trade higher than our key competitors, polyester and rayon. I think right now we have continued to see good demand, healthy demand around cotton. I think that this is probably on the higher end of prices. Maybe there is a little bit of transitioning, but I think that there are other factors that go in rather than just cost. So also looking at, we really are seeing a resurgence and a lot of interest in natural fibers these days. So companies are trying to transition away from some of the synthetic fibers, specifically thinking about things like the microplastics issue. So really, I think that we're in a good place. I think we've seen some good demand. Prices are probably, a little bit higher than the manufacturers like to see. But, again, there are a lot of other factors that go into making those decisions.
It's Agriculture Today.
We've definitely kicked it off, and this morning we saw the first hearing about the conservation title, and NCBA was able to participate because the hearing was on sustainability goals and, how the Farm Bill can help further those industry goals that have been put in place. So we were really excited to have a witness on that panel.
Mary Thomas Hart is Environmental Council, National Cattlemen's Beef Association, talking about the debate for the next Farm Bill.
Certainly going into the Farm Bill process, we're going to be looking at, what conservation programs in Title II will be helpful for our producers and helpful for our industry in achieving our goals.
The next Farm Bill could also focus on processing. Ag Secretary Tom Vilsack.
In 2021, agriculture exports hit a record high, while farm income was at its highest level we've seen in 8 years. And that's certainly a product of the hard work of all of those who are at the conference today. Yet even with farm income up, we recognized at U.S. Department of Agriculture that producers faced challenges in getting a fair price that is reflective of your hard work and the contributions you all make to the country. Many farmers around the country simply don't feel confident that they're getting the fairest price when they sell their livestock at the market. The Biden administration is committed to leveling the playing field for you and ensuring that there's additional capacity and competition that will provide access to more and better markets. Now, because of the American Rescue Plan, we recently announced a total of $1 billion in resources to this commitment. We want to maintain the capacity we have, so we're providing financial assistance to reduce the cost on small and mid-sized processing facilities that were faced with additional work and overtime inspection fees because of the pandemic that could be crippling to their bottom line. We're now providing resources to help them. We're also investing $32 million in grants to 167 meat and poultry slaughter and processing facilities to make the improvements necessary to sell outside the state, creating new and expanding market opportunities for those 167 facilities. And we're addressing challenges in the middle of the supply chain through a $100 million loan guarantee program that we believe will leverage nearly $1 billion in investment and make access to capital more available to address needs like cold storage, warehousing, or even mobile slaughter units. And this year, we'll be investing in a grant program, $375 million to jumpstart independent processing projects to expand facilities or build new facilities, and to provide $275 million in additional lending capacity. Now, we're getting right to work on this by accelerating the funding of these programs with a request for proposal that will come this spring and with additional investments this summer. And we're also going to be investing in building a pipeline of well-trained workers, giving an opportunity to create good-paying jobs in rural America that will support farm families. And we'll invest an additional $50 million in technical assistance and research and development. Now, that'll help independent business owners, entrepreneurs, producers, and other groups such as cooperatives and worker associations to create new capacity or expanding existing capacity. Now, in addition to providing these resources to build and expand new capacity at the local and regional level, we also want to strengthen the rules that protect farmers and ranchers. USDA has already begun work on 3 proposed rules to provide greater clarity and to strengthen the enforcement under the Packers and Stockyards Act. And we've begun a top-to-bottom review as well of the product of the U.S. current labeling rules to better inform consumers in making choices so that they know what that label actually means and it actually is a product of the USA. And as we make these investments in meat processing capacity and create a more competitive market, we want to make sure that you all are receiving a fair shake that you deserve because you work incredibly hard for it. And we believe that this will hopefully improve farm income.
It's Agriculture Today.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
So we have got a lot of challenges ahead of us this year. We've got, costs are up, fertilizer costs are up everywhere, chemicals are up, every single thing is up. Everybody could take whatever you're driving and probably go sell it for more than you paid for it right now, but then you'd have to replace it, right?
On Finding Profitability, Alan Grafton with CAECO ISOM.
So, you know, everything seems to be up. So it's just going to be the utmost important to track that information and to know. I had one grower, you know, tell me one time, I'd rather know I have a loss than not know anything. You know, just that uncertainty just drives folks crazy. I rather, you know, if I got something that's heading towards me, I can plan. I can talk to my banker. I can pivot. So, you know, not lying to yourself and knowing that information, even if it's not, you know, what the outcome you want, is unbelievably powerful.